This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Game of Thrones After Show for Oathkeeper, which we'll find out the name of in just a moment, or what it is the name of. Did not start that off well, but
yeah,
all the way across the table, the lovely Curious and Sarah Stratton.
Oh!
Hi, guys. Pretty tricky.
I could say hi first.
What up? What up?
And saying what up, what up, the lovely Kristen Snyder. What up, Kristen?
Hey. What's up, Dave?
Not
this,
a lot.
This was such a sweet episode. Like sweet, like
it was sweet,
cookies
like
out of the oven.
There were some very tender moments. Yeah. I felt like if Game of Thrones was a game board, they literally took it and just, like, shifted all the pieces so that everyone has new, like, partners and friends. They just kind of shuffled everyone
I
around.
Like it.
They were like,
like the shuffle.
Move some things.
But we did have that very sweet moment, like sniffing your grandma's freshly baked brownies to go with your analogy, Kristen. But the sweetest.
We're cooking up some lemon cakes.
We're cooking
or
up
lemon
sweets today at AfterBuzz.
And guys, I'm Dave Glyden. And so let's go ahead and jump right into the start of the episode where we start at Meereen and Daenerys ready to jump right in. But first we get the scene with Missandei teaching Grey Worm the common tongue.
I thought this scene was sweet. To me, it was, like, very suggestive of, you know, maybe we'll see some budding relationship.
Oh, yeah. They're totally going to hook up, teach me some sexual words. I felt like that's what where he was going with that,
that's
right?
That's where the lingo's heading.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. For me, though, I feel like most of Game of Thrones scenes, like, I enjoy them from front end. This scene dragged a little bit long for me.
I agree.
Like, I was like, okay, normally they're really good at, like, getting a lot of information and moving really quickly. So I was a little worried from this first scene because I was like, okay, is this going to be a slower episode? But it picked up pace, so I was quite happy after that.
Well, you learned some backstory on the slaves, and Missandei in particular, where she talks about how she was taken when she was 5 years old, and Grey Worm was taken so long ago, he doesn't even remember what life was like before he was taken. Missandei actually does remember, and she was taken from Noth, I think that was the name of the area, but she does remember what it was like, and before being a slave, so they have that exchange about what it was like before.
Yeah. Which, we have babies being taken at the beginning. We have babies being taken at the end of the episode. Obviously very different ends of the world. But
yeah, lots of babies.
Lots of babies. It's like the baby episode.
And like, language is really important because before we were seeing, was it the pirate Davos?
Davos, yeah.
Yeah, being
Davos,
taught how to
smuggler.
Read. And now, you know, now Grey Worm's being taught how to speak English so he can better understand Daenerys.
But Kristen,
commands.
What is true? What is power? Quiz.
Language.
Power is
power. Power is where people believe it is.
No, it's in power language.
Or the power is power. Power is power. Isn't that what Cersei said? Power is power. That's what Cersei's
when
vow
she's,
is.
Like, attacking, like,
I think it was Littlefinger said power is where people believe it is.
Or
I think it was Littlefinger was the one who said that.
Or he said, like, power is knowledge or something.
Power is knowledge. That was another
remember,
one.
Let us know.
That was another one of the thoughts.
It's currently in language. It seems
currently
to be,
in language.
Yeah.
I don't know. Quiz half gotten. Half. I'll give you half points.
Whatever.
Yeah. No, knowledge in that scene, definitely. So we move on to Daenerys going to attack. And it's time for them to attack. And Grey Worm sneaking through the sewers. And there's some backstory on this that I want to give everyone. Dish off this info from the novels, from the novellas. So basically, the reason that they went into the sewers is because when you look at the giant walls of Marine, and you notice this from the previous episode, how giant and well-guarded it is, the sewers were a place that actually only one person, an entire encampment, as far as Daenerys really knows, knew about the sewers. And this person actually...
So they watched Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. They watched Lord of the Rings. But this person actually had snuck out of Marine in the past through the sewers. And apparently most people die going through the sewers because a lot of times that sewer water is so high that it's going to kill you. There's mutant rats in those sewers. So it's not a place that they're really...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Because no one does that, no one really does that, and you die, and a lot of people die from the smell because that's all doo-doo water. So, yeah, that's why they went through the source. It wasn't just Marine doing a crappy job guarding, and that's why I'm bringing it up. It's because no one really does that, and anyone who's tried dies. So that's why, except for that one person who got through, but, you know, besides that. So we get
knowledge.
To the slaves, though. The slaves are having their conversation and trying to decide if they should revolt or not.
And finally are swayed by Grey Worm, who comes in. And I like that they change his outfit and they kind of are building up his role. To me, that was really being emphasized. They were going to get a lot more supporting characters. I feel like Daenerys is kind of creating her own small council. Like, slowly but surely, with every city she's kind of gaining, she's adding, like, one person. And so I think that, on top of that, this scene was pointing out that Marine's also going to have its representatives. And I'm thinking it's one of the two guys who is already talking.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm probably the one who really wanted to stand up, fight for your rights. I can't remember how that song goes. Oh, well. Failure on my part. So, yeah, they do end up revolting, and that's really...
Partays.
Yeah.
What?
Anyways, so I'm just like, was that the song I was thinking of? Probably. So... Anyways, the slaves revolt from inside, so really they win the city from within, and they don't really need to do much actual warring. It's all from the smarts of having the sneaky sneaks go inside. And can I just point out this one scene, though? The scene where the one guy, the one master, is by himself, and then all of a sudden, all the slaves come from the right, all the slaves come from the left, all from behind, all to take down this one guy.
Yeah.
Come on, guys, I know you're excited, but that's for one dude.
They said the ratio was 3-1, but in this situation, it was like 50-1.
He seemed to have, like, woken up late or something, because they seemed to have already had a lot of action taken place.
I don't know. I felt like he was the first attack. Like, they had just been let out with those knives, and it was like...
You see the first or last.
Well, it's funny. Party time. Well, it's funny his reaction, too, when he first saw the thing on the wall. He's like, like, he just didn't take it seriously at all. He's just like, oh, this crap, whatever. Yeah. At least that's the reaction I took from it, was that he was just kind of like shrugging it off.
He was kind of out of the loop.
Yeah, he did seem very out of the loop.
He wasn't, I feel like he should have been more shocked. I mean, they knew this was coming. This was should be all that the city was talking about. And then it moves on where we get Daenerys remembering how many slaves they killed.
Ooh,
and it was the justice versus the injustice.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about this scene?
Wait, so Simfire, by the way, on the scene before, pointing out that anyone wonder why the Kill the Masters was in English when all these people were speaking Valyrian. Good point. For us audiences.
So we
can understand. I don't speak Valyrian. Do you speak Valyrian?
Yes.
Kristen does.
I'm trying to learn.
Obviously.
You need Grey Worm. You need Miss Sandy to teach you.
There we go.
But yeah, so yeah, the scene comes back with that number, 163, as you were saying. And pretty brutal, but I see why she did it.
She really doesn't seem to take the advice of her advisors very often.
Nah,
I mean,
but...
she's gathering them, and I feel like she does respect them, but how often she really listens to them hasn't really been a big point. And sometimes she's been right, like it got her all of the Unsullied. But in this circumstance, I guess, on the mercy end. I think because so often with the kings and, when we looked at Joffrey, he was always offered these opportunities of mercy, and he never went through with them, and he was always the one killing. And every time he did that, I was so horrified, and it made his character so much worse. And then Daenerys, who I really love, she is now not being so merciful. And she says it is justice, but when is she going to start listening to the people around her?
Well, I think it was also the fact that they were children. Had they been people? Because, you know...
It was also child slaves. It was like a double whammy.
Yeah. And I remember something with the Dorakis, like, you know, like with her baby and everything. I don't know. I feel like she's like a special care for when children are, like, you know, put in danger and stuff like that. So I just felt... I liked it. It was quite a spectacle, serving injustice with justice instead of with mercy. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I feel like that was sort of a warning, saying that she's definitely going to be losing control in the future.
I think it's just interesting also that we've never really seen the side of the Masters. Like, in all these cities, we get typically, like, one or two leaders, like, out front being huge, you know, jerks that you want to see killed. Mm-hmm. But I'm just hard to believe that every single person in that city who is a Master, like, is an evil person.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not, but they kind of go along with the game of, yes, I'll have, like, all these slaves, 3-to-1 slave ratio.
It's just getting very, like, one note. Like, I want to see, I don't know, one of these cities, like, the Masters, like, be like, wait, like, we want to join you too, or something. Like, I want to see more dimension there, because right now it's like, oh, you're the bad guys, and if you're a slave, you're automatically a good guy.
Well, it's a societal thing, right? It's, as you're saying. So, like, in this society, this is just how it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of part of what Essos is known for. That's why Westeros is very much like, we're not like them. We don't have slaves. But it's very normal there. It's the normal thing. And that's not saying, like, yes, slaves are wrong. It's not good to have them. And we have that moral compass. But when you grow up in your area, that's all you've ever known, that seems very normal to you. It's a very normal thing. So that doesn't necessarily... I agree with you. It doesn't necessarily mean you're evil.
And they're all getting killed for it. Like, I'm not saying that, like, you're right, they should free all their slaves. But I'm sure that there were a couple Masters in there, maybe, who were good to their slaves or something, and maybe they should be shown a little bit of mercy.
All men must die. Sarah.
Valor Morghulis. Morghulis. Yeah. I said that wrong.
I'm just going to say that we've seen Westeros, which doesn't have slave cities, and there's still problems with, you know, the class system, low-born, high-born, and treatment all in those areas. So just because it's not a slave city doesn't mean it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, we have the fact that Daenerys does take the city now, and we get her looking out at Meereen. She's now a leader. She has her own city now that she's taken. She's really risen up.
Mm-hmm. And she's embraced her flag.
Yeah.
I liked that. And that was sort of like that first Master looked up and saw the three dragon flag over top of, you know, that city's emblem. So that was significant. And that, you know, he was like, oh, shit. Yeah. And they're here. They're coming. We're going down.
And, like, for me, you said that the three-headed dragon, which, is it a dragon or is that technically
a
hydra?
It's a dragon.
Okay. That is this flag of the Targaryens, correct?
Yeah.
Is it the same colors? Like, is she just fully embracing her family?
I think it was. I believe so. Yeah.
It was like black and red.
Right. I know red is one of their colors.
I've seen it. And so to me, it's like interesting because I would have just guessed that she created on her own, being that it's three and she has three dragons. But if this is like a history thing that she's pulling in more of her family, I think that it's kind of good that she's embraced her sigil, and it's kind of creating that dichotomy where she still has her eye on Westeros. Because part of me is like, well, she has all these great cities. Like, she's conquered them in this whole world, basically. But she's still, like, looking to the other side.
Yeah, King's Landing has always been what she wanted.
I still think she's, I don't know. What? I'm like, she just does, she bothers me, okay? I don't like Daenerys. I know everyone's going to hate me for saying that, but I don't like her anymore.
What?
I liked her in the first season because now to me she's like that whiny kid just like her brother who's like, well, I get it. I Westeros belongs to me. I deserve it.
You've never even been there.
You don't even know what Westeros is like.
Do you think she should just kind of stay where she is and, like, rule this?
I mean, like, it's cool. I like that she's freeing the slaves. That obviously with our modern mentality, that's great, but I just don't. I don't like her attitude of, I deserve it. Me, I get to rule it. I should have it.
I don't think she would be that kind of ruler, though. And I feel like everyone's born with a bias to some pursuit, hopefully. She was born with the pursuit to, you know, go to King's Landing and rule. But I think she'd be a fair queen.
DX, or D-Zana on the chat saying, we hate you!
Yeah, we love Daenerys.
And also pointing out, black and red is the colors, and three dragons are from the first conquerors of Westeros.
Perfect.
Fine. I'll be the outcast. I don't care. I'll be the outcast.
Just sit on that side of the table.
And Maxine Stanley's like, "What, Dave? What?" So I just, she's starting to seem whiny to me. Okay.
I like that we're getting a little bit of a throwback to what Tywin said last episode with, A good king listens to his advisors, but a good king listens to a wisest king listens to their advisors long after they're ruling. And I feel like that's kind of what's going on with Daenerys right now, is that she's not listening to her advisors after she's already listened to them now.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah, that's Thanks for bringing that in, Steven.
Yes, I think that's a really good point, and we'll see how that plays out. So that will be coming up in future episodes. So let's go ahead and talk about shift over to Westeros and King's Landing, where we got Jaime and Bronn still practicing. And Bronn's fighting tactics are awesome. I love the way Bronn fights.
And I like
gotta win.
I like that he speaks to Jaime without candor and sort of speaks to him exactly what he wants to say, and without regards to this is someone who's highborn and I am not, and I should treat them with respect. He actually says what he needs to hear, which goes into that whole speech about, you know, how he named out Jaime basically as like his champion who would ride and fight for him before Bronn was going to, and he's like, are you going to fight for him now? And I just loved that.
His ability to call everyone out.
Yeah, his ability to, you know, just tell people the truth and be honest. And
you can
actually
back it up with some good backhanding.
Yeah, everybody needs that. I think, you know, he's perfect for Tyrion, but also for Jaime too, because everyone has sort of sugarcoated their conversations with him probably his whole life. And that's why he was so caught off guard and was like, do you speak to Tyrion like this?
To me, I mean, I really liked Jaime's involvement in this episode, and a lot of the heart of this episode came from him and his scenes, including even the scene with Bronn. But I was, part of me so shocked, because last week, where we came off of and everyone's been talking about him and Cersei, that wasn't even mentioned, glanced over in this episode, and then all of a sudden he's portrayed to kind of be a nice guy again.
I like, okay, then for me personally, I'm like, if on the comments, thank you guys, a lot of people were kind of correcting me a little bit on the scene that happened in the books. Cersei ended up consenting to Jaime in the book before they started actually doing things. At first she was saying no, like, I don't want to do it here, and then she consented, like, all right, let's do this. So it was easier to accept in the books that this wasn't mentioned at all. And that is very weird to me. I agree that it was just like, I mean, yeah, she's being cold and distant with him, but nothing was really mentioned at all. Like, that was a pretty brutal scene to watch.
And we didn't get any true reaction off of him. Maybe it should have been, to me, it should have been in the beginning of the episode with his entrance. There should have been a little bit more remorse or some sort of him feeling bad about what he did before you transferred into him going up to talk to Tyrion.
I feel like we really haven't gotten an answer from, you know, David and the other guy who is writing this, most of it for George R. R. Martin. Like, why they chose it to be more of a rapey scene, because George spoke up after it and said, you know, this isn't how it is in the books, but, you know, people are at different places now and things are different.
They've kind of been shying away from it.
Yeah, I
think it was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of, in a way, defended them just by saying, like, well, they didn't consult me, but they're taking over it and people are in different places, so different things are going to happen. And that was basically all he's had for his statement. And I think he was also kind of saying, like, well, that's not how I wrote it in the books, just so you guys don't stop hating on me, just so you know it wasn't me. But yeah, I agree. I think it was a mistake, too. And I get that they're in different places and all that, but I think that if you're trying to present this redemption story with Jaime, which we've seen so far in the show, where he's opened up to Brienne, he's starting to change as a person, and you do that, it's just like you get kicked down a notch. A lot, and especially in art, for who we are as an audience and our beliefs, at least in the States and where we are, and I think anybody watching this show from anywhere around the world, like, that's very much a very taboo thing. So to then show that, that's going to, for a lot of people, be like, well, he's irredeemable now to a lot of people, I think.
So basically, if you were sending your hate mail to George, it now goes to David and Dan.
Not this David. Not this one.
Okay, this is what I'm going to say, though. I'm not a fan of that scene. I do think it was a mistake. But we also hold this show to such a high standard, and we're such fans that, okay, they messed up the scene. It's done. I'm still going to watch the show. You know what? I'm going to forgive them for it because I love everything else so much about it. So I'm not going to write any hate mail. I'm still going to be saying, still watch the show.
I feel like they did it because they're HBO and it's like they are allowed to do that kind of stuff. But it's like, if you're going to put a rape scene in a show, like, make sure it has consequences. Make sure it's reflected on. I just don't like that it was so breezed over
The thing is, nothing. The thing is, there are tons of rape scenes in this show, actually.
Right.
That's a good point.
It's just they're more...
Even this episode, for example.
Yes, they're either, you know, low born or in terms of war or with whores or whatnot. And this is our first, like, more of, like, highborn.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was
main
also...
character.
It was the only thing going on in the scene. We were forced to focus on it, and it was drawn out. It was painful for anyone watching.
Well, mm-hmm. I think it was a multitude of things. I agree. There's the fact that, yes, there's rape in this show a lot. A lot of people have drawn on that, have talked about that. There's a lot of rape in this show. But to me, it wasn't so much that. Like, yeah, there's rape, and that's looked at, and that's observed in the show, and it's supposed to be a negative thing. But then the factor of you have to take into account the two characters who exist, and was it something this character would do, especially for the story that they're trying to portray?
It's an interference in the
character.
And
it's not that I would necessarily put it past Jamie to do that, per se, but in this character arc that they were in the middle of, that's where it's like, well, that doesn't mesh with this character arc to me.
And then they re-went back to their original character arc in this episode.
Right, yeah, they just went right back to it.
Straight into it. It was like that scene was just kind of like a blip out of nowhere.
And as Kristen said, ignored it. But let's go ahead and talk about Jamie and Tyrion. Because who do we all love? Tyrion, who's in prison.
In this scene, at least the beginning of it, their conversation was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was so brotherly, so even matched. They didn't portray Tyrion to, you know, be the smart one. They really let the banter go back and forth. It was like full of digs at each other, puns at each other, bonding. I just loved almost, like, all of the initial, like, I think it was, like, 10 lines.
Yeah, it was like, do you really think I would kill your son? Do you really think I would kill my brother?
And
I just loved that.
And they were, like, they're both the Kingslayers or whatever.
The Kingslayers brothers. Do you like the sound of that?
And I do want to mention for the book readers out there, I'm not going to spoil anything, but this scene happened in a different time in the books. And it was portrayed things happen very differently in a lot of ways. I mean, it was a different time, so things are going to be different. But I'm curious for the book readers out there, and I don't, in case something happens later in the show where it does start to be similar, that's why I don't want to say anything that happened. But I just do want to point out that this was a very, very different scene in a lot of ways. So just want to throw that out there for people who do read the books without spoiling anything.
You're getting me scared. Mm-hmm, you're getting me scared because right now I just feel like they're on the same page.
I'm just saying it was a different situation. Yeah. Like it was a different timeline. Like Jamie wasn't even in King's Landing at this point in the book.
Okay, well, talking about something that was in this episode, I liked how Tyrion was like, whenever Jaime said, how do you expect her to feel? It was, her son was dying in her arms, and he was like, her son? Like, I thought it was important to note that Jaime wasn't even owning that, you know, Joffrey was his son. And he kind of wasn't. He never really took part in raising him either.
That's a great point. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to, like, silence you. I'm just agreeing with you. I think that's a great point.
He's just a Cersei.
But, yeah, in this scene, though, Tyrion tells Jaime that he didn't do it. He straight up says, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. And with that whole snide remark of the whole, like, well, would you kill your brother? That whole thing, that great exchange between them. So Jaime opening up to Tyrion and telling him, like, hey, just so you know, Cersei's offering knightship for whoever take Sansa's head. And Tyrion telling Jaime as well that he doesn't think Sansa, at least at the moment, is capable of this. And I think any of us would have... I think that's an easy observation to make.
I like that, though. He's like, Sansa's not a killer yet.
Yeah, puts that... And then, of course, we get the transfer into her scene, and now she's in, like, the darkness and all the scenes, like, blue and dark and in shadow between her and Littlefinger.
Yeah, which we come to right here, too, where we get a lot of reveals in this moment. I mean, I think they talked about this the last time we saw him, but Littlefinger's on his way to get married to Lysa Tully, who is the person who had imprisoned
Lysa
Tyrion.
Lysa
Arryn, thank you. I don't know why. Tully was her previous name before she came in Arryn. So... Sorry.
She's the widow.
She used to be a Tully, now she's an Arryn, and she's the widow of Jon Arryn. But that's why she's ruling over the Eyrie, is because of Jon Arryn, who was the ruler of the Eyrie. And that's who Littlefinger's off to go marry. And Littlefinger talks about the necklace. Congratulations, Kristen!
I don't know how in the world you got that. Like, kudos to you. Sharp eyes or a really big love of jewelry.
I think it was because I was wearing that giant jeweled necklace, and I was just like, it just made sense to me. Like,
and you're,
as a writer.
Especially since your necklace had poison in it as well. You
it
were
did.
Like, it comes. My necklace has poison.
I hate Dave squeezing his water. Just kidding.
It's all because of your Daenerys.
It was because you spoiled all that stuff and everybody hates you on that. I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it was just the fact that why they put so much focus into the necklace that I know the show doesn't make mistakes. And so when they put that much focus into something small like that, you got to think there's a bigger reason.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked, but that's what it is. I thought that, as Dave pointed out, they're giving us answers very, very quickly this season.
I like that.
Like, it's part of me likes it because, you know, it keeps going, it keeps fast. Part of me is like, I expect there to be, like, that episode of filler where I'm just like, wait, what's happening? And we are getting answer after answer after answer. So first we get, you know, that Littlefinger has this new friend. It's the necklace, yada, yada.
It's basically Queen of Thorns.
Yeah. Next scene.
But we get a lot of Littlefinger's backstory. But, I mean, yeah, the whole necklace thing, too, I mean, with what Kristen was saying, was when you'd ask, like, in the couple episodes, like, well, I don't think they would just throw in a scene about the necklace. And I know people didn't like me when I said, I'm sorry, I said the necklace was important, or at least the scene was important. They wouldn't just throw that in there, and that's very much what Kristen was saying. Like, the writers are very good. They don't...
Yes.
As you said on the first episode, Sarah, you were like, I don't think they would just throw in something for no reason, and clearly they don't. But Littlefinger kind of talking on his strategy of playing the game here, which is to confuse everybody. Nobody can know what I'm doing except for Sanji. You can know.
I felt
not so, really.
I'm like, he must have some serious like self-loathing somewhere, though. He's like, I just don't want any friends like me. I'm like, yeah, no one does.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone wants a friend like them, personally. I don't know if you reflect on it. But
yeah, I'm way too annoying. I would never want to be friends with myself.
Like, if you met yourself in real life and you were somebody else, chances are you would probably just be annoyed. I don't know. But
Sarah's like, I think I want to be a person I'd want to be friends with.
I know. I'm like, I feel like that would be your goal. Like,
you should always keep that in mind. But I just feel like
to be friends with.
That's very difficult. I really like that Littlefinger, Peter Baelish, was like... Sansa was like, what do you want? Or what would you risk? And he's like, I would risk everything. And she's like, well, what do you want? And he's like, well, I want everything.
Everything.
What really does he want? Does he want the throne?
Well, he says he's like unsatisfied with everything he ever gets. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I just don't think he's satisfied with himself. So maybe if he did some inner work, then he would be a happier person.
I feel like satisfaction is the death of desire. So who wants to be satisfied, really?
I mean, I like being satisfied.
I don't know.
But desire is gone then. Isn't desire better?
Eventually, all these so-called friends he's trying to make are going to realize none of them want to be friends with him, and then he's going to die.
Well, I don't think he has any real friends. I think he looks at everybody.
Alliances.
I think he just looks at everybody as a chess piece.
Yep.
Like, everybody to him is a chess piece that he's going to move in whatever direction that he wants. But as he talks about his new friends who also want a Joffrey dead, cut to Elena. Oh, and on the chat, we've got DX Zana saying, Joffrey was a spoiled brat that Cersei raised to be king in a twist Lannister way. And Brian Fernandez asking, do you think that Joffrey's brother could be a better king than he was? Ryan Wilson saying, he could be a better king. Elena thinks so, too.
I don't think it would be very difficult to be a better king than Joffrey was.
Nope.
I don't think that would take too much effort. Well, like, if you sat there and did nothing, you might be a little better.
I just thought that, can we talk about that scene with Margaery sneaking in? Like, that was just the cutest scene.
Thanks.
Like,
I mean, kind of cute, but the motivation of it being your grandmother being like, hey, hey.
Yeah, what?
She basically says,
I was good in bed, and I know that you're better. How do you know that? Queen of Thorns, what have you and Margaery been up to? How do you know this?
Yeah, she basically tells Margaery to sneak into Tommen's bedroom and move your lady ways around and just tease him and just be, like, a spectacle for his eyes. Even the music they played was, like, very Romeo and Juliet. So I would, like, love for this show to actually have real love in this show. So if they could somehow actually forge a
real
relationship.
It's like the show The Bachelor. It's real love.
I just...
Yep.
I just am a little confused. Because, like, I feel like first we got, like, Queen of Thorns confessional of, like, I stole my sister's husband by sleeping with people, and I kill people, and I want you to do the same thing. And then fast forward to Marjorie's, whose husbands just keep getting younger. And
I yeah, that's true.
She's like the mother figure now. Well, can we just talk about the most important thing of this episode?
The fact that Tommen's 10 years old? He wouldn't even have sex appeal for her. Like, well, what does a 10-year-old think about, like, that doesn't think about that?
In this day and age, they do, Dave, visit high schools and junior highs.
That's not, this is elementary school for Tommen.
Elementary, fine. That's where it's at these days.
It's
very scary.
Nope.
But that's not what I was going to talk about. And clearly he was attracted to her just by like, his eyes, like, wowing for, like, yeah, that's the look. But the most important part of the episode was Sir Pounce. Like, the cutest thing ever. I don't even like cats, but just the fact
that Sir Pounce is going to get eaten by a direwolf.
Yeah, but Tommen was just so cute that he has this cat, right, called Sir Pounce. And it just, like, also adds to his character that we love him as the audience.
Tommen is a sweetheart.
He's so sweet.
I don't wish him ill.
Very, like, clearly going to be. He's not cruel, as he himself says.
One of the few people in this show who are capable of love still at this point.
Sir Pounce. So, Kristen, are you saying that you would agree with Joffrey want to have Sir Pounce skinned and all that since you don't like cats?
Is that what I'm getting out of this? Not. I have an allergy.
If you skin the cat, it wouldn't have fur anymore.
No, I like
hair anymore.
I like seeing cats on screen. I like seeing them in pictures. I just don't want Sir Pounce sleeping with me tonight.
Look, listen, That's Kristen, all. Listen. Remember our little secret.
Tommen has dirty little secret.
And then All American Rejects started playing. So, yeah, so I don't know. Like, I get what she was doing and all that. And I get they were showing that he was very enthralled by this. But to me, I was just thinking, he seems a little young to me to really care about this. Like, to me, I'm like, when I was that age, I don't think I cared at all. I've been more focused on Sir Pounce. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he kind of was.
But, I mean, at least the betrothal isn't too far-fetched.
Berkey has a great point here. This would be creepy if the sexes were reversed. Which is kind of true.
Yeah.
It's funny that when it's like a little kid, you're like, go you, man! You got this! And then if it was a little girl, you'd be like, oh, that guy's a creep.
I would like to point out that I did not think that this was okay just because he was little. I still thought it was creepy.
No, I mean because it was a guy, not because he was little.
I'm
wasn't the fact that he was little that would have made it okay.
No. It's creepy. Like, whole thing is creepy.
I saw love in his eyes.
If you want true love, Brienne and Jaime. Happy.
That was really sweet. Like, that exchange that they had in the end was like, if we ever meet again, we will bone.
No, but it's not. It's not even that. No, it's not, because I feel like their relationship is so much more. I feel that, like, Bran really represents, like, what Jaime kind of wishes he could be doing.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Not only is she a fighter, like, he's bestowed his sword on her. He's given her this armor, and he set her out on the task to, like, stand
up
for
Sansa,
which is his oath. Like, she is, and he's, like, allowing her. He's allowing her in, and, like, to stand up and, like, be his, more
sword.
Or less, his sword hand.
Exactly.
And,
Brienne,
like, that
is now
was
his sword.
Him. And so I just feel like they have this bond, and it was so sweet. I'm so happy. And they're going to be in love.
Can we first, like, come back a little bit to the scene?
No.
Sorry. We'll come to it. It's just, I want to talk about we get from Olenna and Marjorie's conversation.
Okay.
And also this pointer where she's kind of telling Marjorie, like, hey, the reason that she had Marjorie do all this stuff is because she thinks Cersei's going to try to turn Tommen against her. So just another
obviously.
One of those Game of Thrones things. So I want to point out the whole reasoning behind her doing that.
Wait, what? She wants to do what? Turn
Tommen against her? Olenna thinks that Cersei's going to try to turn Tommen against Marjorie.
Obviously, that was obvious.
I would totally agree. Well, I mean, Cersei's on her lone island with her bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Like, she's just
swimming in wine. Swimming in grapes.
Simfire thinks that this was basically like Tommen's bar mitzvah. Like, age. I don't know. I think of it as, like, being way younger than this, but I think that's just from the books, because they do age the characters a lot older in the show than they do in the books.
Now,
Sansa's, like, 13 years old in the book, so it's even everything that's happened to her is really creepy.
Okay, question. So last week, didn't we see the necklace thrown on Dantos?
Yes.
And then didn't we also see her touch, the Queen of Thorns touch Margaery's necklace?
It was a different necklace.
But as if it also was poisonous. That's how I felt.
I took it to be, like, just for the audience, like, oh, let's see necklaces. What you're doing there.
Yeah.
I think it was just more for the audience. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I feel like she's also, like, obviously wants Margaery to marry Tommen and then possibly kill him in his sleep.
Well, I guess after they, now that we finally consummate the marriage, you can do whatever. But, we also have the scene where Cersei and Jaime talk to each other, which we could talk a little bit about, and how untrusting Cersei is of Jaime now. So maybe that is the aftermath that she doesn't trust him as much.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very interesting. She's like, well, I've been thinking about it, and why did Kat set you free? And it's just like, she just can't seem, doesn't want to believe that all it is was to bring the girls back. And she doesn't think that now Jamie's on her side anymore. And she's very untrusting of Jaime at this, it would seem like to me.
Yeah, and their relationship's kind of professional in a way, because like he's saying my lady and she's calling him Lord Commander or whatever. It's definitely a different relationship at this point.
And I can't say that bothers me too much, because the more distance that they have between each other, probably the better.
Yeah.
And she wants more King's Guards at Tommen's doors. We need four. One's not
enough. She's a little bit overprotective.
Well, maybe she should be, because Margaery is creeping in there.
Well, yeah, but, anyways. But it wasn't to kill him. I mean, if she wants...
Maybe not this time, Dave.
But if
maybe
she wants,
not this time.
But if she wants to marry him, first she's got to marry him, and then she can kill him.
It's all part of the plot.
It's all part of the game. The Game of Thrones.
All I know is Cersei's on Arya's list to die next. So.
Ooh.
So get down, though, saying, yes, yeah, the same necklace. And there are screenshots online of Olenna picking the stones off of the necklace at the wedding. Well, I mean, that was Olenna picking off the stones to basically drop poison, which I think I can say at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Olenna was picking off the stones to drop the poison, not to create a new necklace for Margaery to wear.
Yeah.
So Margaery was not wearing the same necklace. But we do get this scene that you guys were talking about that you love so much of Brienne and Jaime and Oathkeeper, the name of the episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how his dad's going to feel about him giving away this sword.
Does he need to know? You don't need to tell him that.
Priceless sword. Just disappears out of thin air.
Just because he's been wanting Valyrian steel in the family for years and years. Just give it away. Who cares? He won't notice. But he also gives away Podrick.
Oh, that was so cute.
Exactly.
That was another sweet
new
moment.
Friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Podrick Payne, which is a fun scene with Pod and Bronn. I enjoy that exchange between them. But we also get a new forged mail for her as well. So Jaime's giving her all these things, because now as they're looking over Brienne, reading over Jaime's history, that kind of what indicates Jaime saying, like, well, there's still plenty of room left. And it seems like he's starting to take the route with Oathkeeper if he wants to start putting better things and filling these pages with better.
Yeah, but finding other people to fulfill your promises. I don't agree with that. But I guess he does need to stay there, so at least he's trying.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question for you guys. So Brienne's love for Jaime, is it more like a loyalty love like she had for Renly, or is it more of a romance?
I think that for her it comes out of she finally feels like she's understood him a little more. And I think that she has it seems like she very much respects him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're just so similar people.
Well, there's the wedding scene where Cersei asks Brienne straight up, do you love him?
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't answer, which is a tell in itself.
Mm-hmm. But what kind of love is it? Because she loved Renly, too.
But she didn't know Renly. I think she wanted Renly. I think that was the case. So.
Yeah, because she never knew him. She didn't know anything about him. Like, she even said, like, when she held him on his death, that was the one time she ever got to hold him. Like, I feel like that was infatuation. I feel like this is someone she actually knows.
Okay, so you guys think it's a romance?
I think it's a bromance.
Lady. No, but okay, that glance that they exchange, like, that's like, we're going to do this later.
Look, the Sir and Lady thing was a reference. That was what Podrick said. And that's actually something he does in the books a lot. So it's funny as a book person, but like when he referred to Brienne as like, Sir, I mean, Lady, he just doesn't know how to refer to her.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, that's why I said that.
What did you guys get from that last glance that they exchanged, Brienne and Jaime?
I just feel like I feel like they do love each other or like care about each other and have, at least have a very a fondness and a respect, and they've created kind of like this team partnership that they can't be together right now, but they're still like connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like to me, I feel like Brienne at the moment cares more about Jaime than Jaime cares right. about Brienne. I mean, I think Jaime's still a little stuck in Cersei world, even though, mm-hmm. even though. Why, you're so evil, but I still like you some... Whatever he said in the last week, I think he's still kind of in Cersei world too much to really be
but
all
there's
about Brienne.
There's obviously a huge care, though, if he's giving Bran so, like, the sword. Like, he wouldn't just do that.
Well, keep this in mind, though. He, after that conversation with Cersei, sets up that thing where he can't just go out and protect Sansa, because basically Cersei wants him to kill Sansa. And if he goes to protect her, he's basically screwing himself over and, like, proving he's not loyal to the Lannisters. So this is a way for him to get out of it. Why don't I have the most loyal person I know who's never going to break an oath, because she would never, ever do that, and that's what she's all about. Go do that for me, because I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's not true. I'm saying that he could just as easily have done that and go just asked her. He didn't have to give her a sword and a squire and a whole new outfit. Like...
armor dress.
Yeah.
He better have gotten those measurements right.
He's giving her some gifts.
Right. Well, I mean, part of it, too, those are some awesome gifts to get. I mean, part of it, too, is, like, he also doesn't really think he can use that sword and utilize it properly now that he doesn't have his right hand. So to him, it's kind of a useless gift. Like, well, great, now I have this sword, and just is kind of mocking because it's just there and he can't even use it.
I think he gives it to her with heart, not with, like, a get out, I want the sword out of my sight.
But they do call it Oath Keeper because you know Jamie's known as Oath Breaker. Get it? I had to say it. I had to mention it. So let's go ahead and move forth.
Yeah, let's
to
go
the wall.
Let's do it.
Where
we
get
quickly.
John? Yeah, let's go through this thing. So John's trying to teach everybody how to fight, and then Alistair Thorne comes to bitch at Jon Snow. Because that's just what Alistair Thorne does.
And then we get the big reveal that they get to choose their next Lord Commander, and it just doesn't go to Alistair, which to me was a huge point. Mm-hmm. And that we're going to hopefully get some sort of vote or, you know, democratic ruling.
Snow.
Snow for president.
Jon Snow.
Yeah.
And then we also get, I think that there was a little bit of a tell where we got the archer. The little boy who said that he was an archer. I think that's going to come back to us. That's
my prediction.
It's about
as significant as the necklace.
Potter, the whole next fighting scene ever at the wall, we're just going to be like, where's the archer?
He will save John.
So we also get, and this was Sarah noticing this, so Sarah, you noticed it right away, recognized him, Locke. Locke has already arrived at the wall. That was really quick, I got to say. But Locke already at the wall after being there, sent by Lord Bolton. So... for us as an audience, it's like, don't think we can trust that guy.
Yeah, we kind of know. I mean, and as you pointed out, they put in the pun of losing a hand. And, of course, he was the one who chopped off Jamie's hand.
Yeah.
They threw that in there kind of to trigger our memories at who he was, what he was doing.
So and why is he there?
To spy.
Weren't the Boltons talking about that they think Jon Snow could be a liability? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like
so
maybe they want
to
Locke to go take out Jon Snow.
Apparently a lot of people
Jon
Snow. A lot of
people. You gotta pronounce it like Ygritte does.
Okay.
It's important. So yeah, a lot of people, because I mean we've got a lot of people against, as you're saying, against Snow, but like with Janice Slint and Alistair Thorne, but we get now Sam not really happy with his decision with Gilly. Now he's like, maybe she shouldn't be in Moltown.
Oh, now he figures it out.
Obviously.
A little late to the
At least he did figure it out, finally.
Yeah, well, it's a little hard to fix now, because now they're going on the voyage to North of the Wall. Hello, Craster. Or Craster's Keep. No Craster.
Yeah, so they go. John has to rally men after he's allowed to do it to go storm Craster's Keep. But only people who will go with him and agree, one of them being Gren, who is great. And Locke decides to come along, too, even though he hasn't even made his vows. What do you know?
Huh. Surprising. And to me, they set up a little bit too quickly that they had a hint that Bran might be there. To me, Sam is looking at the map, and they're like, oh, well, maybe they're going to be here. Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't need that. I kind of wanted them to be more surprised.
Because I feel like Sansa might run into Arya eventually. at, you know, their aunt's place, and it seems like Jon's going to reunite with Bran, so that's really nice to
We're getting a lot of these...
the Starks finally come together.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of these really interesting interactions that it looks like are going to get pulled together. But yeah, we come to Craster's Keep, where we get this evil dude whose name isn't even given to us, I don't think.
I think it is. It's given to us in, like, I want to say, like, the first or second line that he's in the scene.
Was it?
Let's call him
no,
the assassin.
No, because we get Wrath. He orders Wrath to go do something else.
Rast.
Rast, thank you. Rast. Sorry, Rast. He orders Rast to go do something, but I don't think we were actually given his name. But he's drinking from Gior Mormont's skull, like a true pimp does.
And we already hate him because he's like basically just saying he can't be beat and all this
and
crap.
And he was one of the ones who, he was one of the first people also to talk up. He was the one who called Craster a bastard.
I like how everyone's like looking at this guy as a leader when these guys just rebelled and killed Gior. You would think that they also be like, this guy is threatening to kill all of us. Let's all just kill him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that was the point, is that he assumed the authority not by election, in contrast to Mormont, but he assumed it by force, being that he said he could kill anyone there.
And obviously he has fought a few of them off that tried to take, you know, control, and he just killed them.
Yeah.
And like he was saying in King's Landing, he obviously has a reputation for being like an assassin, because they'd give him a name and he'd kill someone.
Okay, so Sinfire saying the Boltons believe Jon Snow may know where Bran and Rickon are. And actually that's a really important point here, is that, and this is a major, major book deviation that I can say, is that Sam tells Jon and has told Jon that Bran is north of the Wall. Sam does not tell Jon that in the book at all. So that's a huge deviation. So at this point, Jon had no clue.
Okay, well, I'm really glad that they did change that, because to me, I would be very furious with Sam if he did not.
It's because he swore an oath, and to him, he's like, I can't break my oath. I can't do that. He can't break any oath.
Did we see that oath in the show?
Oh, so Sinfire saying this guy, this leader's name is Carl, by the way.
Carl. I feel like we did know that.
That was the most unfitting name.
Yeah, I guess, like, I think a previous episode they said that.
I remember Carl, yeah.
So, sorry, guys.
Carl,
I'm going to get it tattooed. Won't forget that one.
So we get that now we have Ghost is locked up, and somehow they've captured Ghost. We have them going, a baby's born, and now Carl decides, let's just do what everybody does and just leaves the baby out in the wilderness. I mean, it's not Carl who does it. He says another man to do it. But
Rast, giving the White Walkers their numbers.
Yeah, as we find out. So we get that really cool scene where we find out how another White Walker is born, and this is basically how White Walkers seem to be made. And I really liked the pedestal, the little altar that was created.
Yeah, that's
some cool
really
stuff.
Cool.
And I think that we're finally getting more of that different, like, the hierarchy within the Whites and White Walkers. And I feel like they've kind of kept us in the dark. We have the one, like, figurehead horseman White Walker, in this, he didn't even really seem to be the leader. He seemed like he was bringing the babe to the actual leaders.
That's a good point.
Like, he didn't seem to have... I don't know if he didn't
skull have... Skullhead McWhite Walker leader. He looked like a devil head dude.
Yeah, instead of long beard dead horsey man. So I think that that's going to add a lot of layers. And if we ever get kind of more details about who they are,
right,
or like... Is it really just Craster's kids?
So get down, Do saying, any thoughts about the White Walker scene at the end of the episode? The official HBO synopsis says that he is the Night's King. I mean, he does seem to be the leader. That's what it seems to indicate, as you were saying, Sarah. Did you guys have any more thoughts on that?
I felt like, to me, from what I could see or what I was trying to picture, was that there seemed to be kind of like a row of them behind the altar. I don't know, it seems a rough number, about like 9.
Yeah.
And then you had the one come up on the horse. So I feel like there is some sort of system of power within them. They're obviously not mindless. They've come up with this plan. They've been taking these babies. So how they're created, who's the oldest, and how they've kind of started this lineage and how they rule themselves, I think it's going to be interesting. But I think that they definitely have ranks. I think we have, you know, our normal, like, zombie types. We have the ones that can think. I think that there's more to this.
And the zombie types are just called Whites. Mm-hmm. So, and then the White Walkers would be the creature that took the baby. But we also have on the chat BR Fernandez 07 asking, what do you think was weirder, the Walker finding the baby or Joffrey dying? He wrote Joffrey dying. I don't know. I thought I wouldn't find the Walker finding the baby. We already knew about that from a previous season. So to me, that was kind of like so weird, because it was already ingrained in my head they'd do that.
See, that was to me. It's like they've left that question open for so long.
Mm-hmm.
We've known for since Sam tried to, like, take Gilly away, that they took these babies.
Right.
So, and they've dragged this question on for seasons on what happens next. And now, in, like, this episode, as I mentioned, we're getting all these other quick answers so quickly. Joffrey was surprising, shocking. This was a long-awaited conclusion.
Right. Like, Joffrey was shocking, but I wouldn't find it weird, per se. That wouldn't be my, yeah. So
what is weird is that now they have Bran and all these people, and I wasn't expecting that.
I really
liked
the Wolf view. That was really cool.
Sinfire saying that was awesome. The whole White Walkers seem cool. Insight for even book readers that really don't know about where the White Walkers are from. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really, really awesome scene. Like I said, I love the altar circulation. But yeah, we get, as you're saying, we get the fact that Bran is now there. And we get his Wolf view as he goes to go try to save Ghost. And it doesn't quite work out. And then they all get captured.
And now everybody's in trouble.
And now Bran, and also Bran admits who he is to save Jojen. And not just Jojen, but also
Mira.
So, yeah, it kind of made that reveal, which is pretty, probably could be pretty important.
And they're being so
know.
Mean to Hodor.
Yeah.
No, but I have a prediction about that. I think Hodor's going to be just fine. But do you guys have, like, some news and gossip, right?
Yeah, so let's go ahead and jump to news and gossip. So,
AfterBuzz TV News.
So, Kristen sadly could not make it as she works, and during the time that we were doing this, so she couldn't be here. But Sarah Stretton, a different Kristen Carroll, and I had the chance to interview Macy Williams, a.k.a. Arya Stark, for the show. So we have a quick 5-minute clip from that, or 4-minute clip from that we're going to play right now. And if you want the full clip, you can either download that on iTunes to listen to that on the Game of Thrones iTunes podcast, or it's also up on YouTube on the playlist for AfterBuzz and Game of Thrones. So let's go ahead and roll the clip.
So
Arya
today
Stark.
We have a special interview. We actually have Macy Williams on the phone with us, who plays Arya Stark, my favorite character from the show. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to talk to you guys.
Does Arya ever do anything that shocks you? Like when you're reading the script, are you ever shocked by her actions or her choices?
Yeah, I mean, I was really shocked by episode 10 of season 3 when she kills the Frey guard after the Red Wedding. When I was reading that, I don't know. I was worried that the audience weren't going to like it because she'd always been taught to fight and to kill effectively and the right way. And it seemed that she was kind of just doing it more brutally than she had kind of been training for so long. And, yeah, I mean, it was a surprise to Arya as well, I think. And it shocked the audience, definitely. It was a big part of episode 10.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of a bit of an aftershock from the Red Wedding as well. So,
yeah
I mean, I think that was kind of probably the most shocking thing I've read so far. And, yeah, sometimes I question, is this the right thing? Like, do I agree with Arya's decisions and stuff like that? Because, you know, if you're playing all these emotions, you have to do it kind of as real as possible. You have to be able to identify with these kind of choices that she makes. So sometimes I do find it more difficult to justify.
And speaking on that, though, and who Arya's becoming, this past week for us, we just saw this big scene with the Hound where Arya thought she was doing something really good by having the farmers that your character that Arya met and the Hound met go ahead and help them out, feed them. She
have
had to take them in.
Had
some rabbit stew. And then
maybe because it wasn't chicken, that's what caused
That's what caused the Hound to get grumpy. Yeah, he wanted some chicken. But yeah, he ended up turning around and robbing the farmers, much to Arya's dismay. So how do you think these actions are affecting Arya's character and who she's going to become?
He says that fantastic line, how many Starks are going to behead before you figure it out?
Yeah.
And I think that was, like, she's reluctant to listen to anything she says, but at the bottom of her heart, she just realized that actually he's going the right way. He's doing the right thing, and he's surviving. And at the end of the day, it may not be what she's been brought up to do, but the Starks aren't doing very well. The loyal Starks that she always, you know, kind of thought were doing the right thing, yeah, you know, maybe they are, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to survive. And I think she's learning kind of the harsh truth to this world that actually just because you tell the truth and you're a good girl, it doesn't mean that people are going to cut you any slack. And she's frustrated at the fact that, you know, she didn't learn more about this when she was at Winterfell. She could have handled herself so much better. And, yeah, she's picking up on a lot of the Hound's kind of brutality. And it's annoying, but at the same time, it's working.
Well, and Arya's such a, you know, she's learning so many lessons. Do you find that playing her influences your life as well. Do you sit there and be kind of like, wait, maybe what would Arya do in this situation? Have you had moments like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Arya is very kind of to the point. And say you have to have like a tricky conversation with your friend, like, oh, say your friend invites you out and you don't necessarily really want to go out, but it's not because you don't want to go out with them, you just want to stay in tonight, but you don't want to sound like an idiot for saying that. Sometimes I wish I was just more like Arya and just came out and said, hey, you know what, actually, I don't want to go out. I would rather just stay in bed today.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we feel the need to kind of like pussyfoot around and just be like, oh, yeah, well, I would come out, but I can't because I have to wash my hair. And I'm like, why can't I just come out and tell the truth, like Arya, and just like say it up front, because it's the most effective way to get things done. And, yeah, she's very admirable for that, I think.
Especially when you're talking to your producers and directors. That's when you especially want to do that.
Brutal honesty.
Yeah, brutal honesty.
Goes over very well.
Really, really well. Totally. So, yeah, there you have Macy Williams, Arya Stark. So, blast interviewing her, and thank you to her again.
She's so nice.
Yeah. I wish I could speak like her. Yeah. I think I would sound so much more intelligent.
I think we all wish we could speak.
But those were just snippets, and as you said, if you want to watch more, there is more to that interview.
Predictions, really quick?
Yeah,
I think that, you know, Arya, it looks like she's going to try to kill the Hound. That's obviously not going to work. But I think that Bran is going to go into Hodor, obviously, like we've seen him do in the past, because we got that remark this episode where they're like, if I was as big as you, I'd be, you know, like, cutting everybody down. Somebody said that, so it's kind of like foreshadowing to next week whenever Bran takes control of Hodor, and Hodor actually knocks down.
My prediction is more of some gossip. If you want to see more of Gwendolyn Christie, guess where you can find her? She plays Bran. She's going to be in Mockingjay 2. Part 2.
Really?
Ooh, I love that.
So she's taking over the role of Commander, I think, Lynn?
Lines? Nice.
Yeah, so she's can see more of her.
I am a fan of The Hunger Games. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is K-L-E-I-N.
You can find me at Cinematic Escape, or you can Bing or Google my blog, Cinematic Escape.
And you can typically find me here, but I'm going to be gone for the next 3 weeks, guys. So I'll be back soon.
No.
But tune in to see who our
I'm going to Europe
guests
to go try and find some of these.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you guys next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Next week.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.